and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Andrew Matthews. Andrew is a best-selling author and international speaker. He's the author of many books that are bestsellers all over the world in 43 different languages. He's here today to talk about his latest book, How Life Works, which just came out in America this week. And Andrew speaks to corporations all over the world on happiness and prosperity. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hi, Marie. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Now, you're in Australia, and you just told me before we started, it's 5 a.m. there.
Yes, I like to get up early anyway, so it's nice, yes.
Sounds to me like a nightmare, 5 a.m. So tell me about how you like getting up so early.
Well, when I write my books, I always write at about 5 a.m. anyway. I like to write when there's no telephones and no distractions. Mm-hmm. And I also play tennis, usually about 6. So for me, it works, and I find I tend to taper off into the evening.
Beautiful. I imagine that when you're getting up before everyone else is and before all the phone starts ringing, it sounds like you probably get a lot more done in the day than probably I do.
Well, one of the disciplines I like to keep to is I like to meditate for at least 15 or 20 minutes. And I also find that that is easier if nobody else is up in the house. So I can meditate, and if I'm writing a speech or if I'm working on a page of a book. I don't write very quickly either. I tend to write no more than a page a day. And so I'm not that I'm writing a page and it's taking me all day, but I'll usually finish whatever writing I'm doing by about 7 or 8. Hmm. And then it's office work or traveling or whatever else I'm doing.
Hmm. Awesome. And I want to ask you about How Life Works, but before we jump into that, you also, your books are full of cartoons you draw as you're speaking on stage. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I was drawing long before I was writing, and when I wrote my first book, Being Happy, I knew I could illustrate it. I just wasn't sure if I could write it. And I guess I began with the idea of writing books for people that don't read, and I wanted to write books that were entertaining. When I first got interested in self-help and this idea that we could actually take control and improve our lives, I read a lot of books and a lot of the classic books, and I found that they had good messages, but they were sometimes a bit boring, and they didn't have cartoons. So I thought, well, I would like to write books that reach all kinds of people. You see, when I began writing my books, that was late 1980s. And the people that read self-help books then were like insurance salesmen and managers. And I wanted to write books for people who were working in government offices and post offices, people who were driving trains and mothers and students. And so I thought, if I could write in a simple language and include cartoons to help to illustrate my points, then maybe I could reach more people and more people in more countries. Hmm. And it turned out that it worked. So
that's awesome. Sorry, what were you going to say, Andrew?
I mean, it's just been an extraordinary journey where these books began in English and then went into languages like Spanish and German and Chinese and Japanese, and then into all kinds of smaller languages like Finnish and Icelandic and so on. So people really embrace simple messages that help them with their lives if it's not too complicated. And as it turns out, if it's in a slightly entertaining manner, and if they can associate some of the messages with little pictures.
Interesting. Thank you, Andrew, because I read all the boring self-help books that don't have any pictures. And so when I see a book with pictures, and this is no offense to you, I discount it.
Right.
But it sounds like you're reaching out to an audience that might not be willing to sit through 300 pages of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that 90% of books never get read, and about 90% of people are too intimidated by bookstores anyway, or by books. And so my experience has been that I will often get letters from people that say, your book Follow Your Heart, your book Being Happy, your book How Life Works was the first self-help book I ever read. And I didn't even intend to read it. I just picked it up and the messages were simple, and before I knew it, I was halfway through. And so in many ways, those people are the people that I set out to reach. But fortunately, I find that brain surgeons aren't insulted by the messages anyway. You know, I mean, because people who use their brains a lot are also often relieved to read a message that is concise and simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the things that they say, that if you really understand a concept, you should be able to articulate it in a way that a small child could understand.
I believe that. In fact, when I write my books, I imagine that there's a 12-year-old person reading my book for whom English is not their first language. And so I evaluate every sentence I write from that point of view. And I think if I can achieve a sentence which is that understandable, then I'm creating a book that can be a pleasure to read, because people don't have to go back and say, what was he saying there?
Absolutely. Oh, well, that's really powerful, Andrew. I'm glad that you're changing my perspective on books with more simple language and simpler ideas and fewer words.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I know that also when you're speaking on stage, I can imagine being able to illustrate some, literally illustrate it in a picture, can help people to digest the information in different learning modes.
And we hang on to pictures in our mind. I mean, so often I will meet somebody 15 years down the track and they will say, I saw you on stage when you were speaking to McDonald's or Hewlett-Packard or something, and you made this point and you drew this picture, and I still remember it. And we remember by imprinting images in our brain, and what we usually do with words is we try to convert those words into an image. So if the message is already an image, then we don't have to work.
Thank you, Andrew. So let's actually, before we talk about How Life Works, which is the name of your latest book, How Life Works, and I said that it came out this week. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's released in the United States 15th of May. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So it's now on hard copy on Amazon, Kindle on Amazon. Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you. And if you want to get in touch with Andrew, find out more about his speaking, his books, connect with him on social media, you can go to his website, andrewmatthews.com. And before we talk specifically about How Life Works, for people who aren't yet familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came into being a speaker and author on happiness and prosperity?
Absolutely. My training was in classical drawing and painting. I actually studied at the Art Students League in Manhattan when I was a teenager. And I was making my living as an artist in my 20s, and I noticed a few things. Number one was that a lot of people were happier, that I knew were happier than me. But the big thing that really amazed me, shocked me, when I was 25, I discovered that the happiest people I knew had bigger problems than me. And that made no sense. Mm-hmm. I thought, how can this be? And I bet those of you that are listening have come across people in your lives who you find have bounced back from tragedy. They've lost loved ones. They've maybe gone broke. They've been sacked. They've suffered serious illness. And yet these are some of the people who find more joy and more meaning in life than almost everybody else. And so when we notice that, we have to recognize that it is not really what happens to us in life, but it is how we think about what happens to us. And it is what we look for in life. So that was a like an opening for me, an aha moment. And I began to read voraciously and attend seminars and do everything I could to try to figure out how I could improve my attitude and essentially enjoy my life and be happier and be more grateful. And ultimately, I wrote a book called Being Happy, which was rejected by 17 publishers. But publisher number 18 sold 2.5 million copies.
Wow.
Which was, and it wasn't an instant thing. I was actually on a world tour for 2 or 3 years, where I would go to the UK. I spent time in the US, in Singapore, Malaysia, the Philippines, New Zealand, wherever, and I would share my message in bookstores and draw cartoons and talk about some of the simple principles. And so my books started to spread around the world bit by bit. And being happy led to a number of other books. I mean, I got requests to write a book for teenagers. And so I wrote a book called Being a Happy Teen with my wife, Julie. I wanted to write a book about enjoying work specifically and about career. So that led to Follow Your Heart. Around the time of the GFC, it seemed we needed a book to help us through tough times. So I wrote a book called Happiness in Hard Times. And so the succession of books that followed were really a response to need and requests. And ultimately, my latest book, How Life Works.
Beautiful. Well, all right, let's jump in then. How does life work, according to Andrew Matthews?
Well, there's a myth. There's a myth about life, and the myth says that when you become successful, you will be happy. And the fact is that happiness makes us successful. And maybe you listeners out there have come across people who don't seem to work that hard. They're probably not even the best educated, but they always seem to fall on their feet and they always seem to enjoy what they're doing, and life seems to work and they just seem to succeed. And those people are proof that it's really not so much what you know, but your success is very much about how you feel. How you feel about yourself, what you feel you deserve. And when you are feeling good, then life works. And when you are feeling angry and depressed and like a victim, then doors slam in your face and life is very, very hard. And having written a series of books about happiness, I really felt that I needed to address this issue of why is it some people's lives just work so beautifully. It's not that they don't have challenges, but those challenges seem to resolve. And they just seem to go from one opportunity to another. And so the essence of how life works is that we are a vibrational being, and we communicate with the universe through our feelings. And when we are feeling good, then we are attracting good things. And when we are feeling bad, then we are attracting disappointment and disaster. And it's that simple.
Thank you, Andrew.
Does that make sense?
It does. I'm gonna have a lot more questions in just a moment.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Right now, we are speaking with Andrew Matthews. He is the author of many books. His latest book, the one we're talking about today, is How Life Works. You can find Andrew at andrewmatthews.com. And Andrew, the image when you were talking about how life works and talking about people who things sort of come easily for them, the image that comes to mind when you were talking about that person is Ferris Bueller. Have you seen that movie, Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned the word victim. And mm-hmm. that can be a hot button word right now, especially. There's this thing that we keep hearing, victim blaming. And so I'm just wondering if you can give us a little bit more clarity on what you mean when you say something like don't be a victim, have control over your life, or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you use the word victim.
Yeah. I guess I would summarize it by saying that we find in life what we look for. And if you look for good things in your job, if you look for good things in your boyfriend, if you look for good things in your city or your country, your family, you find them. And so you start to feel blessed and you start to feel grateful. And there is nothing that transforms our life direction. There is nothing that makes us more of a magnet for opportunity, for wonderful people, for jobs and employment that just fills us with happiness and joy. There is nothing that transforms us more completely than a sense of gratitude. And the opposite of that is feeling like everything is terrible and we are a victim and other people have ruined our lives. Now, all of us will have circumstances, all of us will come across people who seem to have made us less happy or made our lives more difficult. But if we can find something within any situation, any relationship where we feel blessed, then we move from victim to gratitude and acceptance. And acceptance is power.
So it sounds, Andrew, like you're saying we don't have to like the circumstance that's happening, but we label things as good as good or bad, but every situation is just a situation. It's not inherently good or bad. It's only how we choose to look at it or how it makes us feel.
Yes. And the thing is that once we have one negative thought about something, negative thoughts are like rats. And let's say that you go to work and you take a phone call from a rude person. Your first thought is, well, I hate rude people, followed by your second thought, well, in this job, I'm surrounded by rude people, followed by your third thought, well, I'm not even paid well, and your fourth thought, I'm not appreciated much here at work either, followed by, well, I'm not really appreciated at home, followed by, and tonight I've got to cook dinner, why can't my husband get off his butt? My mother always told me I was making a big mistake. Now I've got a headache, maybe it's a tumor. I mean,
Were you spying on me yesterday, Andrew? Because that sounds like a lot of the stuff I was thinking.
So the idea is that negative thoughts are like rats, and you get one negative thought and before you know it, you've got a plague of them running around your head. And that is and everybody laughs when I say that, but that is how life works. So once we understand that, as soon as something appears to be going wrong or something we don't like, we say to ourselves, for example, well, what's one good thing about dealing with rude people at work? Well, I'm developing character. That's one thing. Another thing could be I'm developing people skills that will help me to get promoted. Maybe rude people help me to appreciate my family who are not rude. Who knows? You can find things. And the reality is that lousy things happen, and the reality is that happy people have a habit of saying, when they appear to be a victim, what's good about this? What's good about breaking my leg? Well, I can watch some movies I've been wanting to see. I can read some good books. I can learn empathy. There's always something you can find. So when something appears to be going wrong, happy people, successful people, achievers say, there must be something good in this let me focus on that. And then you move away from victim, you start to feel better, and your life starts to work again.
Thank you, Andrew. Again, if you want to check out Andrew's website, there's a podcast, blog postings, of course, more information about his books. You can go to andrewmatthews.com. So, Andrew, now for myself, I come from, and I'm sure you hear this often in the work that you do, I come from a really negative background, or my perception is negative, a lot of trauma, abuse, neglect, depression. So it's all well and good to say that successful people tend to be successful because they're happier to begin with. So what advice do you give for people who are stuck in that habit of being of seeing the negative? That's how their brains are wired. How do they shift out of that so that they can get to the point where they can be happier?
Well, firstly, let me applaud you for making that shift from where you came from. And you are, of course, evidence that it's possible to decide I'm going to make my life better, and I'm going to focus on the good, and I'm going to move out of it.
Thank you.
I really think we need to be gentle with ourselves, and if we have come from a negative background and we're still surrounded by enough negative people, that we realize that it's going to be a journey that takes a while. But if we can just make one step at a time, if we are depressed and we feel that everything is against us, but we can get up and we say, what is one good thing about today? And then maybe what's another good thing about today? And we focus on good things. We start to use affirmations. We take time to have a discipline of reading a positive book, even a few pages every day. We implement these little disciplines, and bit by bit we find our way out of the swamp, if you like. And sometimes we will feel like we're being dragged back into it, but it's just a pattern of thinking that we took on, and patterns aren't us. They are simply a pattern that we can replace with a more positive pattern. And the good thing is that as we become diligent in saying, you know, what am I saying? Even things like complaining, you know, when we realize that obviously we talk about what we think about, but the fact is also we think about what we talk about. And so when we decide that I don't have to complain, I don't have to talk about everything that is not good, then we make space in our minds to think about more positive things. But it is really, it's a little bit like going to the gym. You need to do a bit every day, and gradually we find that we become stronger, and we find that we begin to attract a different quality of person. So it is a journey, and it takes a while, but so many, many people have managed to pull themselves out of it. It's perfectly possible.
Thank you, Andrew. I'd actually like to add to that as well, that about attracting happier people or more positive people. But when we start to build more skills and we're able to approach life with a more an attitude of gratitude, often the people that are already in our circle who might be negative or might be doing things that make us feel victimized, sometimes our change in attitude actually impacts how they treat us, and it improves.
Oh, very much so. And it can be from the point of view that they see that suddenly we respect ourselves more, so they stop being abusive. It can be that they start to say things that are a little bit more positive, which are a reflection of what we're doing and saying. Or sometimes they become uncomfortable that we are starting to set goals for ourselves that seem to be a little bit unrealistic, or maybe they think we're becoming a little bit weird in that we begin to look for the positive things, and sometimes they become less comfortable around us, and sometimes they drift away, which also makes space for other more positive people to come into our orbit.
And you also mentioned, because this has been true for me, I've been practicing this stuff for years. I've been hosting this show for, I don't know, I think it's been like 10 years now. And when I first started, I was in the depths of depression. I wasn't able to work. I was barely functioning. And it was part of my wellness strategy to get better. And over the years, things have gotten better in my own, my attitude and my life and opportunities. But I still have days like yesterday where I can't get negative thoughts out of my head. I'm panicked about the future. And so I just, I'm wondering what advice you have, but I also want to say if anyone is in that position, it can be easy to see, well, Andrew gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and meditates and then plays tennis. If a person's barely able to get out of bed, that's a pretty stark contrast that might feel impossible.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And I understand that some people that are listening today and some people that read my books will be in positions where they would really benefit from some professional counseling and some professional help. Mm-hmm. So I realize that my angle and the information that I share and I'm talking about are really for, you know, average people who deal with average kind of negative thoughts and challenges and things like that. But I do have many people write to me and they say, you know, I was in counseling or I was on medication and ultimately I found that some simple strategies that you talked about were what really got me through. And number one was getting up every day and looking for one good thing, deciding that I was going to complain less and not just because something goes wrong that I don't talk about it. Deciding to do just a little bit of exercise, do something, because exercise stimulates those endorphins. And, you know, when we're really feeling least like we want it, and you don't have to run. You know, you can bounce, you can swim, you can do somersault, do anything. But a little bit of exercise will get those endorphins going. When we choose to exercise a little bit more kindness makes us happy. You know, we give a compliment, forgive people, that makes us happier. Some of those simple things, we just got to push through those barriers a little. But the things that we can do to make a difference are not that complex.
Thank you, Andrew. I really love that. And a lot of the things that, I mean, you mentioned that your books are for people who aren't at a level necessarily where they would need professional help. But a lot of the things that you mentioned, like gratitude and kindness, there's clinical evidence behind those practices to show that they actually do help improve mood and health.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm curious also, you have your blog, the Happiness Blog, and you mentioned that you have a book about finding your purpose and enjoying your work, and you have a blog post, I Hate My Job, Should I Quit? And I found that really interesting because I know that we all have days at work where it can be, you know, we question, like, why did I come here this morning? But I'm just wondering what tips you have for people who are thinking that way.
Yeah. If I would encapsulate it, I one of the messages in that blog, and I also share it when I speak to corporations, is that there is something very noble and something beautiful about seeing somebody doing their best. And that can be whether it's a four-year-old child that is drawing a portrait of her mother or somebody polishing the mirrors in a hotel elevator, or it could be a brain surgeon who is using 25 years of study to save someone's life. And you see someone who is putting 100% their entire effort into doing the best they can, and it is so beautiful. And the other thing that is just as noble as seeing someone do that is being that person, being a person where you do your best because that is what you stand for and that is how you live. And that is the way that we enjoy our work. And so long as you're in a job, your best chance to enjoy it is to give it everything you have. A guy says, well, my colleagues don't work as hard as me. Irrelevant. A guy says, well, I should be paid more. Irrelevant. While you are there, if you want to feel best about yourself, then you give it everything you have. And it doesn't matter whether you're going to quit in a month. It doesn't matter if you're going to quit at 4 o'clock this afternoon. While you're there, you do your best, and that is how you feel good about yourself. And the good thing about when you do your best, and that is what you stand for, then you attract opportunity. And it may be that you'll get a promotion, or someone may come along and say, this person is sensational. I want to have them in my company, and I want to pay them what they're worth. And if no one comes along and you still are going to be stuck where you are for another year or two, then at least you feel good about yourself and you feel proud about doing your best while you're feeding your family.
If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, there's a free course that can help. The Wellness Recovery Action Plan is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. It's based on the key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. For more information about the free RAP groups hosted by Vancouver Coastal Health, visit their peer-led website, spotlightonmentalhealth.com.
We are speaking right now with Andrew Matthews. Andrew is the best-selling author of many books. His latest is How Life Works. You can find him at andrewmatthews.com. And it's interesting, you were talking about doing your best at work and how that leads to new opportunities. And I've found that to be true for myself. More and more opportunities have kept opening up to the point where now I have a new problem, is what opportunities do I choose? Which is, I guess, a good problem to have. But that idea of when we're around other people who aren't trying their best, can we talk a little bit more about the thought process that happens and how we can challenge that so that we can keep focusing on doing our best?
Yeah, I think it can be frustrating trying to change the attitudes of other people. And so just as you can't make other people happy, someone says, "Well, you know, how do I make my husband happy?" And he will only be happy when he's ready to be happy. And about all you can ever do is be a role model. And at some stage, he may decide to be a bit more like you, and maybe he won't. And similarly, when we're around people who aren't doing their best at work and we're amongst that, unless we are their boss, then we can set some targets. But apart from that, our best course is to, again, do our best and be a role model and understand that some people won't do what we do or agree with it, and not get too stressed about it.
Thank you. I like what you said about not being able to change other people, but how do you, or how do your workshop participants or clients, how do they deal with that, seeing that person around? Like, we are influenced by the people who are around us. So I'm just wondering, at work, we have a coworker who, there's a person who I heard from just recently, who the other person at work is leaving all of the stuff for them, and it's ending up the bosses are thinking that this person is the one who's slacking off, and now she's got double the workload. How does one go about dealing with that with a positive attitude so that eventually people start to see the reality without having to be that person who's whistleblowing and telling on everyone?
Yeah. Every situation is going to be different. So we can only operate with guiding principles. So at some point you need to speak your truth, because that's the only way that you can feel good about who you are. And it may be that you will speak your truth to the coworker or speak your truth to the boss and say, this is how my experience is, and it doesn't seem fair, and we need to resolve this in some way. You have to speak your truth, but it may be that you will also have to come to terms with the fact that other people aren't going to change. And sometimes it is that having, when you've given your best effort and you're not appreciated, that you decide to go look elsewhere. But I suppose my overriding thought is that even if you're in a situation that is not ideal, and that can be a marriage or that can be an employment situation, your best chance is always to say, my personal code is that I do everything I can to make this work. And you do it until the time that you decide to leave.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for clarifying that, Andrew, because it sounds like if we put in our best effort always, and we also speak our truth when it's appropriate, if it does come time to leave, then we know moving forward that we did everything that we could within our power at that time. We did the best that we could. So we don't look back thinking, oh, maybe it was my fault, maybe I should have done this or that. If we're always trying the best that we can with where we're at, then we can continue to feel good about ourselves.
Very much so. And even if we look back at times when we haven't done our best, and we look at a relationship where we didn't do our best or a situation where we didn't do our best, then it's also important to say, well, I didn't perform like I could have then. I know better now, and I'm not going to whip myself for it either. You know, we need to be gentle with ourselves, and this challenge of being happy and feeling that we deserve to enjoy the good things of life is very much wrapped up in this idea that we have to be gentle with ourselves. Who says we have to be perfect? You know, we're just human beings doing the best we can, and when we know better, we do better.
Mm-hmm. So for the person, this is me speaking, so I had a day of like a lot of complaining, both verbally and in my own mind. I know that I have my own self-compassion practice, but just from an Andrew Matthews standpoint, what do you say when, okay, so that's done, we've had the bad day yesterday, now moving forward, how do we look at that today?
Well, firstly, I survived. You didn't die. And it's about bouncing back. People say to me, Andrew, you write these books on happiness, are you always happy? I get frustrated, I get irritated with people. And I also feel that kind of weight or responsibility that I better do what I preach, which I aim to do. But for me, it's about bouncing back. As like you say, that was yesterday. I went through it, and there may be some things I would do differently given the same situations if they happen next week. But now I've bounced back. I'm feeling better. And now I'm going to focus on the good things of what I have today. And, you know, the interesting thing about the present, you know, we get so caught up in things that happened in the past or what's going to happen in the future. And you mentioned that, how will I cope with the future? But the present is always pretty okay. And we go through so much stress, but if we look at our present moment, like right now, we all have enough air to breathe. We probably all think that we're going to have enough to eat before we go to bed. And unless you're having a heart attack or being eaten by a bear, today, right now, is pretty okay. And yet we tend to get stressed out about things that might happen or could happen and that probably will never happen, but even if they do, we'll still be okay. And the worst thing about what happens that might happen is that we're going to be saying, well, what if then that happens then? Mm-hmm. But the present moment is usually perfectly fine. It's all those crazy thoughts about, well, what if this happens then that drives us to distraction.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, you mentioned at the start of the show that you get up in the morning, and maybe you can take us through, you mentioned you meditate for a period of time. Can you just take us through maybe what a typical day in the life of Andrew looks like for when you're having a good day and taking good care of yourself?
Yeah, well, it's not that spectacular, but what I tend to do is I tend to get up early, maybe 5:30, just because that suits me. And I will come into my office upstairs. I work from home, so I don't need to commute. And I will meditate for maybe 20 minutes. And then having done that, I have a gratitude book. And I used to write down three things that I'm grateful for, but I decided to elevate that to 10. So now I've got to write 10 things I'm grateful for before I do anything. And then my wife may still be asleep by then. Three times a week, I will play tennis at 6. And because that's just one of the joys of my life. I love to run around and chase a ball. And then I will be back in the office, and usually I've got some speeches that I'm doing somewhere that I'm preparing for or writing, or if I'm writing a book, then on the days that I don't play tennis, I'd be writing a page or two, and then it's my wife, who's my publisher, also works from home, and so we get to spend a lot of time together, and we also travel a lot. And so when I'm traveling, I try to do most of what I do when I'm at home.
Beautiful. Thank you, Andrew. You mentioned the gratitude journal and how you now have bumped it up from 3 to 10 things. And I'm wondering, because I know that I was doing a gratitude practice for a while, and one of the challenges that I had is that I was just listing, like, oh, I'm grateful I have a roof over my head, I'm grateful I have a bed, and all those things are, of course, things that are worthy of gratitude, but I wasn't really feeling it or thinking in more detail. So I'm just wondering if you could say more about how you approach your gratitude practice.
I tend to go through the last 24 hours, and I think of maybe someone that I had lunch with and how happy I was to be able to share a meal with that person. I think of just things that amaze me. Maybe, you know, I came across a kangaroo when, because I'm in Australia, mm-hmm. came across a kangaroo on my front lawn when I came home. Anything that just surprises and delights me, and I also little things like reminding myself of the miracle that I have air to breathe and flowers to look at and a desk to work at and people who want to read my books, just anything, just refocusing my mind on just how lucky I am. And I believe for all of us, it's an expanding thing. And one of the things about having a gratitude journal or process is it gets me, as I'm going through the day, looking for things that I'm grateful for, because I know I've got to write this damn list tomorrow. So it focuses my mind on gratitude during the day, because I have this commitment to write the list.
Oh, I like what you said about that, Andrew. It's like priming yourself. And like what you said, we find what we look for. And because you know that you have this obligation or this commitment to yourself, your mind, even if you're not conscious of it, is probably automatically more likely to look for things to be grateful for.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's one of the big reasons I do it. It's not to have a book full of things, and it's not because it's not so I can say I do it, but it changes my focus during the day. That's the big thing. And I really believe whoever you look for, one of the people that I really respect and admire is the singer musician Tony Bennett. And if you've ever seen him interviewed, he spends his whole time talking about how how grateful he is to the singers he sings with, the musicians he works with, the songwriters. This man is just overflowing with gratitude. And you look at him and you say, how has he had such a magical, extraordinary life? And he's 80, I don't know what, and still doing it. And he is just, he's just so grateful. And I think that is the key to a life that just continues to transform into one opportunity after another.
And I imagine that people want to be around him more. Because I know I was with my boyfriend yesterday, the poor guy, as I'm complaining about everything all day long, he started to feel not very good either. So the opposite is true. When we're grateful, when we're happy about the people around us and we're looking for the things that we enjoy about them, they're going to feel better as well.
Well, absolutely. I'll give you an example. I was in Malaysia a little while back. I was talking to I was doing a radio show with a girl called Sarah. And Sarah said, my boyfriend works with refugees, and so he really needs to be positive, and he is positive, and he's helping people to start a new life, and he needs to be a role model, and he needs to... And she said, he's just naturally positive. And she said, when I first met him, I wasn't nearly as positive as he is. But she said, having been around him for a year or two now, not only I can't believe how positive I am, but she says, I can't believe how lucky I get. Mm-hmm. And for me, that is an encapsulation of this. This book, How Life Works, what is it about? It's about when we feel good and when we can focus on feeling good any way we can every day of our life, we get to the point where we say, I can't believe how lucky I get, because it's the feeling, it's the vibration that attracts opportunity, people, circumstances.
Thank you, Andrew.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah, 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 blah. Explosion. There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live bands, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar, the human serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at CITR. So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
We always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is, without question, the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it, Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers.
We're speaking with Andrew Matthews. He is an international best-selling author and speaker on happiness and prosperity. He's here today to talk about his latest book, How Life Works. You can find him at andrewmatthews.com, and you can get the book on Amazon. Is there anywhere else people can get the book?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's on Amazon and Kindle for people in foreign, like non-US countries. The Book Depository is a good option because they send books free to 104 countries.
Oh.
The Book Depository which is actually owned by Amazon, but they've got a different shipping policy. And also to you guys out there, on my Facebook page, Andrew Matthews Author, I post a lot of happiness tips and cartoons. So if you're intrigued to see if these cartoons are actually funny, that's where you can have a look.
Oh, I'll be following you for sure then. Thank you. So we're talking about how life works, and I have a couple other questions that are sort of just general, but we're getting close to the end of the hour, so I'm just wondering what you want to focus on before I jump in with more questions.
I guess one of the things that a lot of listeners may have wondered about is this whole thing about the law of attraction and how it works and what happens when... Sometimes we think, well, we attract things, and sometimes we think, well, this law of attraction seemed to be broken. And so what is it when, if we essentially believe that we attract things, what happens when we're not and we think we should be? And one of the things that we can do is we might set ourselves a goal and we say, well, I want to have $1 million, and we think about it a bit. And then we say, well, why didn't I ever get $1 million? And firstly, $1 million is not an exciting goal to have. I mean, what we can do with $1 million, what we can do with money is exciting. If we get to take vacations where we can climb mountains or go on cruises or go sailing with our kids or go and get a degree or something because we can afford it, that is what's exciting. So whenever you've got a goal, you don't focus on the money or you don't focus on having cash. You focus on yourself doing those things that would light up your life. And so that is one important issue with respect to the law of attraction. The other one is that sometimes we think we're focusing on the goal, but we're actually focusing on the lack of the goal. And so we say, I would like to have a good job, and I'm upset that I have an unhappy job, and we're focusing on the fact that I wish I wasn't in an unhappy job. And we think, well, I'm keep telling myself I don't like working in this job, why don't I get a good one? But we're actually focusing on the reverse of what we want. And so the key to attracting opportunity, the key to moving forward, is always to be focused on what we want. And the lack of it will actually, when we focus on the lack of it, we will be stuck. And so we say, well, how do we simplify this? When you're feeling good about your goal, when you're feeling joyful and happy and optimistic and in anticipation, then you're attracting what you want. And when you're feeling angry or disappointed or stuck, then you are attracting more of what you don't want. Does that help?
It does. Thank you, Andrew. And actually, we talk a lot about creating what we want. And of course, money is important in our society. But I'm wondering about maybe a bigger, like there's a lot of changes going on. There's a lot of fear in the world right now. So from the standpoint of the law of attraction, from the standpoint of gratitude, what can we as individuals, in your opinion, Andrew, do to contribute to a happier world, not just our own lives, but the world?
Just do it as an individual. I mean, I wrote in, which book was it? Follow Your Heart, that your mission is not to change the world. Your mission is just to change yourself. And that is enough. So long as you can get up every day and you can look for good things and you can be kind to people around you and you can do your best and you can count your blessings, then you are changing enough. You are changing the world enough. I mean, if you happen to be blessed with a career that gives you an opportunity to reach out to thousands or millions of people, then great, you can share that message. But I think for all of us, if we just operate with kindness and gratitude and we just say, this is what I do today, then that is enough, and that will change the world around you.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Andrew. And it's almost time for you to go play tennis, so we should probably wrap this up. We have been speaking with Andrew Matthews. He is the author of How Life Works. You can find him at andrewmatthews.com if you want to follow Andrew on Facebook with lots of happiness tips and cartoons and interaction there. You can go to facebook.com/AndrewMatthewsAuthor. That's correct, right?
Yes, it is. Mm.
And before we say goodbye, is there anything else you want to add before you go off and enjoy your tennis game?
Well, I mean, it's just been a delight to chat with you, Marie. I mean, I guess in summary, this book, How Life Works, that has just been released in America, I believe that it answers that question. If you've ever looked at people and said, how come their life works better than mine? Why is it that some people are successful and that they don't even seem to be very bright sometimes? the answer is, it's not what they know, it's how they feel. And how life works can be a key to you understanding how you can feel better about yourself and your life every day, so that you begin to see each day for you works better and better, and you begin to understand that success doesn't make us happy, but happiness makes us successful.
Thank you. Oh, success doesn't make us happy, but happiness makes us successful. That is a wonderful quote. And I just want to thank you, Andrew, for your time today. And I also want to thank you for opening my eyes, because I had, like I said earlier, this kind of snobby, oh, it's simple and I'm discounting it because it has pictures and all of that. And so thank you for opening my eyes to that. And I'm going to approach that type of material and your material, I'm going to follow you on Facebook, with fresh eyes and a new perspective. So thank you for that.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being with us and listening today. I hope that you have enjoyed this hour. Go ahead and follow Andrew Matthews on Facebook or go to his website, andrewmatthews.com. I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Making a cuppa. Stop! How many cups of tea are you making? What? There's enough for 10 cups in there. Only boil the amount of water that you actually need. Very good, old boy.
That's right. The British are making less tea to conserve energy. Students can conserve energy, too.
A student's life often follows a pattern. Eat, sleep, study. During this routine, don't forget to make time for energy conservation. This will be the easiest thing you do all semester, and a little bit goes a long way. Do your laundry in cold water and hang clothes on standing dry racks or clotheslines instead of using electricity-intensive dryers. If a dryer is the only option, throw in a dry towel with wet clothes to absorb moisture and cut down on drying time.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9.
Join Team Power.
One of Victoria's best up-and-coming bands, Fortune Killers, is on tour with their debut album, Temper Temper. What I'm looking for is buried by design. Fortune Killers with Vancouver alt rockers High Love play Guilt & Co. Tuesday, June 12th.
It could be global, trance, spoken word, rock, the usual and the weird, or it could be something different. Oral Tentacles, Thursdays 12 to 6 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
You're listening to 101.9 CITR and the Parts Unknown show. I am Chris Arific, and I have absolutely no reason to play my first song other than I just found this little track and thought it would be lovely for everyone to hear on this lovely Monday. The sun is shining, the wind is rustling the trees. That's what wind does. This is the Parts Unknown show. ¶¶